Now, yes, I'm on. All right.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 28th of September, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And you will find at some point that our operator, our board operator, our producer is Dave Enright, who is staring now at the screen and going, what the?
No lie, I've not seen anything.
There's no nothing going on there? Yeah, that's okay. Not working.
We've got a recording. We'll give it to them.
There's that.
How about click the record button instead of the arrow? There we go. That's
blah, 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 blah. Okay.
5.
No, not yet. Okay, now.
Premature. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 28th of September, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And all of us, apparently, are the engine. Not me. I don't go near any of that stuff, but
we've got blinky lights, we've got bouncing meters, and we've got a waveform.
And I guess we're good. We're ready to go on this webcast only edition of Soundbites. The Buffalo Bills are wending their way toward either victory or utter defeat. We're not sure which. And while they do so, we are web only. Although, what, October 12th, we're live?
Yes, October 12th and November 16th, we will be doing the normal show just because of program situations.
Exactly. And we're, of course, on the web now, or we're on Second Life now. Yep. Sundays from about 11:45 or a little later, depending on when we actually get home and get ourselves situated.
Well, we're figuring 12:30, depending upon the time of the game, because normally we can, right when we're done recording here, buzz right down the hallway, go into the other studio where we normally record sound bites and do Second Life from there. But due to the occupancy of the studio during that time frame, we have to thus pack up, go home, and get set up at home to do Second Life. So that's why it'll be at 12:30, just to give us a little time and not get us
so on days
accident.
When the Bills play at 1,
we're
11:45 to 12:45-ish, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And on days when the Bills play at 4, we're about 12:30 to 1:30-ish.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that was easy.
And if you got that all straight, email me and let me know that.
So you may want to change the front page of the website, which is currently wrong.
Yeah.
Today it is wrong. I can't keep up anymore.
Yeah, but it just changed this week. I mean, we thought we were going to be doing a live show this week and next.
Right.
But
at any rate, and for those of you who want to join in on the Second Life discussion but don't actually have Second Life, there is a link on our front page that takes you to a web-based page.
You should explain that a little bit more for some of the folks.
Yeah, what I've done is I've created a program in Second Life that sends everything we type to a web page. And if you type something at the web page, it will then send that to Second Life. Now, we do talk in Second Life, so some things get a little disjointed. But anybody who's using the website, if you send us a message via the web, we will type the response. And if there's a question you absolutely want to hear the answer to, simply say, please type that, and we will type the answer to that as well. So those of you who are following web only because you don't or can't do Second Life can still join in, as a matter of fact. So that link is on our webpage. It's actually just a little page I put together, a couple of programs, one in the web and one out on Second Life. So it all works out. So give us a shout out there if you're interested in joining the discussion. Join the discussion that way. Okay, there are. Here's our first piece of news. It's also our poll of the week. Every week, of course, we do a poll at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll actually was about securing your passwords. 242 of you voted, making it number 310 in the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. And it was, how secure are your passwords? 50% of you believe, probably erroneously, their passwords are pretty secure. 23% of you who have a firm grasp of reality said they have no idea. 12% are pretty close, saying probably unsecure. 9% are deluding themselves by saying hypersecure. And the 6% of you who are clearly pwned said, who cares? This week's poll is based on a little story I read. Mozilla has pushed out an update to its email client, Thunderbird. They did that on Friday. The 2.0.0.17 update corrects two critical exploits, including a, wait for it, buffer overflow error, as well as five moderate exploits. Centered around newsgroup functionality and an obscure UTF-8 hyperlink spoof, that could have allowed an attacker to execute arbitrary code. So this week's poll question is, my email program is, and the choices are Mail, that's Apple's email program. Apparently they're not much better than Microsoft at making up program names.
Sometimes we call it mail.app, but the .app extension is hidden.
And it's hidden for every single app. Do you call it Safari.app and Keynote.app and Calculator.app? No.
No.
Just because they called it Mail, which is such a grotesquely generic name.
Right. So Apple Mail.
No, it's just Mail. They don't call it Apple Mail.
We call it Apple Mail.
I don't care what you call it. They call it. I have words. I have names for Outlook and Outlook Express that I don't use, and I don't expect anyone else to use either.
They can't be used on the air.
We're web only. So the choices are Mail, Outlook, Outlook Express, Thunderbird, web-based, that would be Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo, whatever, whatever, and text-based, Pine, Mutt, those sorts of things. Other, and I have no idea, because sometimes we get people who just use whatever is in front of them. So far, we've got 61 votes. Thunderbird is ahead, yes, at 41%, followed by web-based, followed by Outlook, followed by other. Two people have actually said they have no idea. So please vote. When you're done voting, if you look at the little yellow box underneath and click on the Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ding. Thank you very much, Chris. Where you can leave an actual opinion, which a number of people have already done. One person, very honest, said because it's free, and another one said, don't know any better. The question, of course, is why do you use the email program you use? So join us there, and then come on back. Check out AskNick.com. I send out a newsletter. There are forums and stuff. It's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you're not all members. You know you should be. And then join us back at the Soundbites Forum, where we have some of the smartest people in the known universe chit-chatting away in the forums. Yeah. Very nice. Very fun.
Get your question answered there. You know, what I mean?
It's huge. It's a huge forum.
Yeah.
It's almost gotten out of control at this point.
Well,
there's a lot of there were a lot of questions this week in the forum about the recording from last week on the webcast, and that's one of the reasons the podcast isn't up yet. We could see that Dave's level was down on our level meters, but we didn't know his mic was off completely.
Right.
So Chris has been frantically working hard to fix that in post.
Normally, of course, on a regular week, there is someone, generally Rob Linton, in the control room keeping track of all of that. During this time of upheaval, during the Bills casts, we are set in what used to be our old studio. Very nice place. We always loved it here. But they start our recording and then they leave.
Because
they're shorthanded.
Six other radio stations.
Right. So Alex Vanderweel, God lover, a sweetheart, starts us up and then has to go back and handle the live shows. And that's perfectly fair. That normally is not a problem. But somehow last week, none of us noticed that Dave's mic was not on. So Chris, who generously gives of his time and his talent, he's not that bright, but we're not at all sure why he's doing this, but he does do this. He gives of his time and his talent, and he is a professional radio recording kind of engineer kind of guy. No, we don't pay him, but he is other places he's a professional. Here he's just another amateur like us.
Just a hack
like us. Is working working very, very hard to up the levels of Dave's
Well, the thing that is we don't use headphones in here, or at least Steve and I don't, because we're just talking. We're not listening. We don't have to listen
to
other...
I don't know if mine on, just to be
And I don't know
safer.
If that would have mattered, because we knew Dave's level was low.
Well, we knew it was low.
Right, in the headphones, it would have been low.
Yeah, right. So, and Chris is working valiantly to bring up Dave's level, but it's not easy, and he's working very hard to do it.
Yeah, the quality of last week's podcast, once it's finished, will not be up to standard, but I'm trying to make it so you can at least hear most of what Dave is saying.
Right. So that will be up as soon as he's done the unbelievable amount of work he does for this. I'm glad it's him and not me, because it would simply never get done.
But, which is why I turned it over to him.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Chris. It's wonderful that you do that.
You're welcome.
Well, here's a bit of news. We've talked about Spore here before, and it's sweeping the nation. But there is a class action lawsuit that has been filed against Electronic Arts in federal court, which alleges that the company defrauded its customers by not disclosing the installation of Secure ROM copy protection as part of Spore's installation. Interestingly, while the most vocal complaints regarding Spore's DRM have focused, DRM, of course, Digital Restriction Management, have focused on the ways it limits the use of the game, the lawsuit is concerned with the fact that it exists at all. Although customers are told that the game uses access controls and copy protection technology, customers are not told that this technology is an actually entirely separate standalone program which will download, install, and operate on their computers along with the Spore download, the complaint reads. Consumers are given no control, rights, or options over Secure ROM, the complaint continues. The program is uninstallable. Once installed, it becomes a permanent part of the consumer's software portfolio. Even if the consumer uninstalls Spore and entirely deletes it from their computer, Secure ROM remains a fixture in their computer unless and until the consumer completely wipes their hard drive through reformatting or replacement of the drive. The complaint also argues that the copy protection software is secretly installed into the command and control center of the computer, that's Ring Zero or the kernel, and surreptitiously operated, overseeing function and operation on the computer, preventing the computer from operating under certain circumstances and or disrupting hardware operations. What these circumstances and hardware operations are, however, are not detailed. The lawsuit filed by Melissa Thomas on behalf of herself and all others similarly situated. Thomas is represented by Alan Himmelfarb of Camber Edelson of Vermont, Vernon, California, and New York. The lawsuit is seeking payments for actual damages, statutory damages, punitive or treble damages, and other such relief as provided by the statute cited herein, as well as restitution of legal fees and relief in the form of restitution and or disgorgement of all unlawful or illegal profits received by defendants as a result of the unfair, unlawful, and or deceptive conduct alleged in herein. I love legal writing.
Yeah. But what does it boil down to in plain English?
They don't want to take the copy protection out.
They want to be paid a lot of money because the copy protection was put in without telling anybody, and I think that's fair. It's a simple lawsuit. It doesn't seem to be a class. I don't know if it's a class action suit.
They might be able to make. Well, see, it's against one company, but a class of people have been affected. So.
Right. So I don't know where the money goes or who gets it or whatever. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say what's interesting. I don't know if sort of in response to the complaints, EA extended the license. It used to be you could install Spore on 3 computers.
Right.
They extended that to 5 with one.
So now you can put this software on 5 different machines.
Well, and that's a very liberal license compared to other programs, especially games. You buy one copy, you can
one
put
game,
it on
one computer.
Right. So if you have 2 computers in your house, you have to buy 2 copies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to. And it's kind of funny with a game, because you typically want to play against another person, so you need a second copy. So there's always been that argument, well, I have to buy 2 copies in order to play against someone else.
Right. Well, it's nice that they're doing that. But while the lawsuit isn't very surprising, considering the controversy Spore's been under with its DRM, it's a bit odd when you consider that Spore is far from the first EA game to use Secure ROM copy protection. Mass Effect used the same software before it, and the recently released Crisis Warhead, as well as the upcoming Red Alert 3, uses it as well. So there's been a lot of stuff going on with that, and yet nobody seems to have cared until Spore came out, proving that Spore...
The popularity.
Well, it's the popularity and the audience is much different.
I would guess as a class, games are the most pirated software. And now, you know,
yeah, I suspect that's
first,
true.
First-person shooters have been, you know, a limited audience, but now Spore is a radically different type of game that appeals to a wide audience, and it's much higher popularity.
Right, right, and also now you're clearly getting into a group that actually A, cares about copy protection, and B, noticed it.
And with the popularity of Spore, I got to believe that in about a year or so, we're going to start seeing Open Spore or
Wouldn't
some clone.
Great?
Yeah, it'll happen.
Wouldn't that be great?
Because you know it's already happened to
well,
all
Nick,
the other popular games.
You've already tried it, right?
I have tried it. It's addictive.
There's a local company, Ambrosia Software, local to Rochester. They had a game like this 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Darwin's Revenge, I think it was called. You started as a single-celled organism and tried to evolve your way up to sentient life. It was 2D black and white graphics, because that's what we had 15 years ago. But yeah. The concept isn't new.
right.
And we probably love the before folks at Ambrosia. That, the text games.
Right.
Well, matter of fact, they're in my lineup to after the first of the year that we can, you know, get back to our regular schedule, get them back on in a few other places.
Good.
Well, we still want to get Spore on too, but I don't think you've heard anything back from them yet.
No, I haven't yet.
They're probably way too busy.
Yeah, they're probably not talking to anybody in the media at this point.
Well, that's why I'm figuring again if we can, you know, keep that tucked aside, and then maybe after the first of the year. You know, have them on too, because like you say, it's very popular out there right now, and I think it's going to even be more so come Christmas time, you know, as folks ask for the newer computers and the higher graphics and everything else,
right.
You know, just like Spore and the rest of them. And that's a good reminder for you folks, because I know it's early, but you know, I've already seen Christmas stuff start cropping up in some stores, which is disgusting.
Skipped Halloween again.
But again, you know,
no Christmas stuff till after Thanksgiving, doggone it.
You know, really. But again, you folks have to, and I can't repeat this enough. It's just like we repeat time again, you know, to back up. The other key thing that you do when you go out to look for software is check the requirements. So usually on the side of the box that will tell you, again, I had another client this week, all porked off because got a game and doesn't even come close.
Yeah, ignore the minimum requirements. Go for the suggested requirements.
Yeah,
double that.
Yeah, the suggested requirements should be your minimum requirements. Minimum means it'll run.
You won't like it very much.
You won't
much.
Like it, but it'll run.
Well, and you know, I mean, they were getting all parked up. Well, you know, I mean, I got to go out and buy a whole brand damn new computer that's working fine for everything else. Well, that's the price of poker. You know, it keeps going. You got to keep anteing up if you want to keep stepping up to these more improved, enhanced graphics and capabilities of everything else. You know, it's just a big demand, and it's the way it's going to go. And yeah, if you're going to want to do that, you're going to have to, you know, step up to the plate and buy the computers that, you know, have the 512K graphics, 3 gig of memory, 320 gig hard drives, and everything else. So, yeah.
Or return the game.
You can't. Most places, once you open that box.
Okay, eBay.
Right. Which is only shadowy legal.
Yeah. See, that's something that hasn't been tested in court yet, is those shrink wrap licenses. Now, the reason stores don't, in my store also, we don't take returns on open to software, is we don't want you to open it, make an illegal copy,
and then
return it. So that's where that comes from. But the shrink wrap licenses that say you agree to it by opening the box, you know, that hasn't been tested in court yet.
Right. 100 years ago, when I worked at the computer center, there was a magazine, and I can't think of the name of it offhand, it'll come to me, had a contest. The guy who won the contest was in Rochester. So he comes into the store and says, you know, I want my $100 worth of software. I said, what are you talking about? So he told me what had happened. I called the company. He did it all wrong. He was supposed to tell them where he wanted to buy the software, and then they would call us, and there'd be a voucher. But I finally got through to somebody, and they said, okay, do it. So he bought $100 worth of software, which in those days was a lot of software. Took it all home, brought it all back the next day. Said, I didn't want this. I want something else. So I called the company again, and they said, yeah, go ahead, do it. So he did. Next day, brought it all back, said, I don't want this. I want something else. I said, no, we're done now. We're so done now. And I called the company. I said, look, here's what I think is going on. I think he's taking it home, copying it, bringing it back, and wants something else. And they said, yeah, we think so too. So he's done. We'll pay you for what, you know, because it's not your fault. is very nice of them. But we're done with him now. So I kicked him out of the store. Then he goes, because it's Saturday. The store was packed with people.
Of course.
So he turns around and says, they're trying to cheat me. They're trying to steal me. So, of course, I got up on the desk, which in those days I could do. And I got everybody's attention, and I said, let me tell you the story. So I told them all the whole story. They all jeered him and laughed at him and essentially drove him out of the store.
Good. As it should be.
It's too bad there wasn't YouTube back then.
Well, exactly. Exactly. When I, you know, those are my people in the store. They were my customers. They were my friends. So that was.
Well, then I like the other legitimate story where the people bought the software, came back the next day, and it was broken. So we, sold them again, and they came back the next day, and it was broken. We gave it to them. Came back the next, finally got fed up and went home with them. And they were finishing, when they finished using the program, they took it out of their computer, the floppy disk, 5 1/4 flop, took it out of the computer, used a magnet, clipped it to the filing cabinet so they'd know where it was in the morning.
Yeah.
We forget what people don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then there's a secretary who once used a thumbtack to put them up on the bulletin board.
Right, right.
Or if you take a 5 1/4 floppy and fold it in half, it fits in a 3 1/2 inch floppy drive.
That's excellent. I did not know that. Thank you for that tip.
The other one I had, when PCs used to have 2 5 1/4 floppies stacked on top of each other.
Somehow
they managed to put the disk into the little tiny gap between two drives.
Yes. Yep. And sometimes you'd find 2 or 3 or 4 of them there.
It didn't fit, so I pushed harder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I've seen it.
No.
There was the time I went to a place, and actually, this is when I worked at Chase. I worked in a bank, and I was walking through a department fixing some stuff, and I saw clipped to a bulletin board with a magnet, a floppy disk, and it was clipped, it was stuck on with a magnet like his, and there was a note clipped to it that said, whose is this? I quietly took out my pen and wrote, nobody's now.
The best one I ever ran in front of was, you know how when you put the 3 1/2 inch floppies, people put the labels and all this other stuff, and things get jammed in there, or you can get the shutters, they come off and everything else.
Oh, yeah, you get those cheap drive discs,
Well, I happen to have and this is going back a ways, when floppies were really used quite a bit. I went over to a client's house and said, while you're here, he says, why don't you take this machine? It was at the office. I brought it home, but now I gave it to my son, and he's having some problems with it, and the floppy drive doesn't work. Check it out and let me know. Okay. So we take it back to the shop, and, I got the thing straightened out, and I got to check out the floppy drive. So I go to put a floppy in it, and it's not going in. So I have a little screwdriver, and I prop the door open, and I got a flashlight, and I'm looking in there, and I looked. Had to do a double take. No, this can't be. Go over and get a pair of, I've got these long forceps.
Right.
Reach in there and I quick grab it. Pull this item out. And I come out and Judine was working with me at the time. And Wally and Dan was there all standing around. Because I yelled to him, you got to come and see this. So pulled it out. And everybody's jaw just dropped. Because what we were staring at was a condom wrapper.
Nice. Nice.
Practice safe computing.
Yeah.
You sure it wasn't the plastic wrapper floppies used to come in?
Yeah.
No. Not when it's got an expiration date on it.
Yeah, right.
And it said Trojan.
That's funny.
So, I had to call the guy up, and I said, well, it's all set to pick up. He goes, oh, good. And you got the floppy going? I go, yeah.
But I don't know if I want to put my disc back in there.
He goes, what was the problem with that? I says, do you really want to know? He goes, what? I go, well, at least he was practicing safe computing. He goes, what was in there? I go, a condom wrapper? He goes, I'll deal with this. This evening. I'm thinking, boy, would I love to be a fly on the wall this story. That had to make for interesting dinner conversation.
I'm sure it did.
I've had printers that jam all the time and none of the paper will feed through, and have found golf tees and bottle caps that have fallen down into the paper feed. The printers are so small now, you set them on your desk and things on the shelf fall.
Right.
Well, I had one girl brought her printer home from college and her mom brought it in to us to get fixed, and it was a beer bottle cap.
Ah, lovely.
He'll do it. And she wasn't quite 21 yet.
Yeah.
He was a friend.
Her roommate is 21.
Yeah.
Microsoft and the state of Washington are cracking down on scammers who bombard computer users with fake warning messages in the hope of selling them useless software. On Monday, the state attorneys general and lawyers for Microsoft's Internet Safety Enforcement Team will announce several lawsuits against so-called scareware vendors who are being charged under Washington's Computer Spyware Act. The vendors targeted by the lawsuit are not being named until Monday, so you may have heard them by the time you hear this podcast, but the Attorney General's office referred to them in a media alert sent out Friday as aggressive marketers of scareware, useless computer programs that bilk customers by using pop-up ads to warn about non-existent yet urgent-sounding computer flaws. This is not the first time Microsoft and Washington's Attorney General have teamed up to fight scareware. In 2005, they jointly sued Secure Computer, a security company, a security software company, they accused of using fake error messages to scare users into buying its spyware cleaner software. Secure Computer eventually paid $1 million to settle the charges, because Microsoft needs the money. Washington's Attorney General has also brought lawsuits against companies such as SecureLink Networks and High Falls Media, as well as the makers of a product called QuickShield, all of which were accused of marketing their products using deceptive techniques such as false alert messages. Fake alerts can be effective. Earlier this week, researchers at North Carolina State University reported that computer users are highly likely to click on fake Windows error messages. In their study, nearly two-thirds of respondents clicked OK when presented with a phony pop-up message. One of the most prevalent in circulation today is called Antivirus XP 2008. Often installed on a PC without proper notification, the software bombards victims with fake security warnings, trying to convince them to buy worthless programs that sometimes even harm their PC.
And then when you try to go to remove it,
you can't.
It comes up with this blue screen that, you know, is literally a screensaver that you think, oh, I got to reset my machine because it looks like it.
It blue screened.
Yeah, the blue screen. Or it'll have a screen like Windows restarted. And it's just sitting there
Still fake screens.
Yeah, with fake screens. All you have to do, if you get that, is to continue hitting the enter key, and it will take you back to a normal screen.
To close the window. See, that's a window that's popping up. If you hit the OK button, you get it. If you hit the cancel button, you get it. Hit the close button in the upper left corner.
Right.
So I've even had some of our Mac customers will call up in a panic. This window came up on my screen that says I have a virus and I need to buy this program. What's the name of the program? You know, Antivirus XP. Are you running XP? For one. And two, no, it's a fake program.
Yeah, every once in a while I get them on my Linux box and I think, sure. No, I don't. But you know, you think, see what happens. Go for it.
Yeah, what the heck?
You know, to preface this with the cliche that I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV,
right. It
sounds to me like, I mean, after a moment's thought, could not this be construed as wire fraud?
Well, that's the whole point. They're suing them for something, and we'll see
fraud in general, and depending on what kind of fraud they might get. Yeah.
But the biggest challenge is going to be where are these folks located.
Right, yeah, they said they haven't named the companies doing this. How do you find the companies that are doing
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, they could be overseas, and they'll sit there and tell them.
Well, but the point is, at some point or other, these companies want you to buy something, so they have to give you some legitimate company name to take your money at.
Or they suck it out of PayPal. And
But again, what if it's overseas?
Right.
Yeah, then whose jurisdiction is it in? And that becomes a bigger fight.
And most likely, I bet you that's where it's going to turn out, that they're, you know, off seas or, you know, just offshore in some Cayman Island or who knows what, doing what. Because all they got to do is put up the server there. They could be anywhere else.
I wonder if the WTO
would be interested. Sending this crap out and, you know, you're going to get nailed. And like as I say, I've heard folks paying anywhere from $19.95 to $49.95 to get this product off their machine. And all it does is take their money, and they're gone.
Yep.
And they're still infected with the XP antivirus 2008 or 2009.
I've also heard of some anti-spyware programs that pop up and do the same thing. You've got spyware on your machine. And it does nicely take off the spyware and then puts its own on.
Right.
Because we don't want the competitor's spyware on your computer.
Exactly.
We just want ours.
Right. Well, as we've been saying before, viruses are on the decline. There's not many viruses that are being written out there now. Artists are now trying to, and that's what they are artists, trying to find ways to scam you out of actual dollars.
Right.
And right now, being able to spam your machine or temporarily infected, think it's infected, and then the only way you're going to get it out of there is to buy this particular product, which is theirs also.
Right.
You know, that's how they're
right. And
their
people
box.
Still call them viruses. We all still call it because it's a shorthand. But most of them aren't actual viruses anymore. And you're right, Chris. I don't know if the WTO would be involved in this, the World Trade Organization.
It may not
no
be
idea.
Big enough for them.
Right. So I don't know about that. But it is Very a problem. Well Generally done. Speaking, folks, when you see one of those notices, close it. Don't, like Steve says, don't even click cancel. Click close.
If a window pops up that you didn't ask for, you're not interested.
Right.
And they're getting sneakier. They don't look like windows. They look like dialog boxes that you're used to, and we're so programmed to click OK.
Well, one of the things you can do is change your color scheme. If you change your color scheme to something other than the standard blue, and then you see a pop-up box in blue, you can be pretty doggone sure it has nothing to do with you. That's just a little safety tip from me to you. That's the kind of thing that is real simple to do. Yeah. There are two that come with Windows, the classic, which is the blue one, silver.
Default is the other one?
Yeah, default. It's either classic or default, depending on what version of Windows you're running. And the other one is silver. And if you pick silver, you don't get the blue anymore. So if you see the blue, it's not real. So that's just a little security tip. Although going back to the blue screen of death, I was given a seminar one day, and I was running a few PowerPoint slides, and I put up a PowerPoint slide and talk for an hour. The very first slide, other people they give an hour lecture. Most of my courses are 4 hours once a week. 4 hours of me talking is a lot of talking. But I'll put, you know, they'll have 200, 300, 400 slides as they go through 4 hours. I'll have six, eight, you know, it's just a way to remind me what I should have been talking about for the last hour.
And they're very high-value slides.
They're high-value slides. But, so I put up this slide, and I'm talking for, like, ever. And all of a sudden, my whole class is going, And I turn around, look behind me, there's a blue screen of death up on the screen. So I walked over and said, let me show you how easy it is to fix these. And I moved my mouse and it went away. It was my screensaver under Linux.
Wasn't it Asimov that once said that, you know, he was asked to prepare a speech how long do you need to prepare? Well, if it's a 3-hour speech, I'm ready now.
Right.
If it's a 2-hour speech, give me a week. If it's a 5-minute speech, give me a month.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But sorry, on a similar note to clicking OK, I've had two more customers this week got hit by the Mac DNS porn Trojan.
What's this? A virus under the Mac?
Trojan.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Just like everything else on the Mac, they got to give it the cutesy name.
And the same goes for Windows. Be careful what you click on. What we're saying with this XP antivirus, fake antivirus program. If a message comes up and says you need to install a QuickTime update and you're not at Apple, ignore it.
Right.
Flash updates come from Adobe. Windows Media Player updates come from Microsoft. So if you're on a porn site and it says you need this codec, don't click there.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And again, it looks like a dialog box, but it's actually a window. You click OK, you get the mess. You get the Trojan. If you click cancel, you get the Trojan.
Right.
But then you have to download it. You have to open it. You have to give it your password. And we're all programmed to do that when things want to install. So be very careful about what you're installing.
Right. Right. And again, under the Mac, change your color scheme.
Yeah, instead of aqua, use graphite.
Right. And when something comes up that looks like aqua, it's not for you. It's not from you. It's not legitimate. Don't use it. It's a real simple fix to make. Yep. Just change your color scheme. And I don't know about the Mac, but under Windows, you can download other color schemes from other places. And of course, in both of those operating systems, you can set them by hand.
Right.
You know, under Linux, you can download a zillion of them. I've created my own that's mostly all green because I like green. And so, you know, I do see the blue pop-up boxes once in a while when you're wandering around the revenue. Of course, I just laugh and move on. But the reality is it's so jarringly different from what I'm used to seeing that it's obvious that it's not legitimate.
Yeah, Apple basically has limited the customizability of the OS. There's a program called Kaleidoscope that lets you do it. But they used to have a lot more customizability built in, and took it out in the early days when Apple was the beleaguered company and Mac adoption was rather low, because if you made your screen really, really garish and horrible and bright orange and purple and green, and someone saw that, they may not buy a Mac. So Apple took that highly customizable out.
My.
Yep. I knew you'd like that.
Yes, indeed. All righty. I go by some people's machines and I look at the color schemes and I think, you need professional help. It's horrible.
Colorblind.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe. Mm. You know, all they really need is contrast, and that's how they found it. Whatever it looks like to us, they're fine.
I worked with a fellow overseas once. He was with the firm for a long time, but he kept making these really dumb, idiot mistakes. And I finally realized, after he was fired from the place, I realized what was going on. The guy was colorblind. He couldn't tell what color resistors he was putting in, or what color he was painting the tower near the airport.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. All right, researchers, speaking of problems, there's a new ClickJack thing going on. Security researchers warned that a new class of vulnerabilities dubbed ClickJacking puts users of every major browser at risk from attack. So all of you Opera and Linux people, all of you Mac and Linux people, listen up, because it's you too. Don't get smug. Details of the multiple flaws, six different types, are sketchy because the researchers who presented some of their findings at a security conference last week have purposely kept their information confidential, as at least one vendor works on a fix. Although the ClickJacking problem has been associated with browsers, users of Internet Explorer, Firefox, Safari, Opera, Google Chrome, and others are all vulnerable to the attack. The problem is actually much deeper, according to Robert Hansen, who's the founder and chief executive of SecTheory LLC, and one of the two researchers who discussed the bug in a semi-closed session at the security conference last week. At a high level, almost everyone is affected by it, Hansen said. The problem is that a lot of people who spent a lot of time defending against other outwardly similar problems didn't see this coming. This works completely differently and has much wider reaching issues. Attackers can get users to click a button in ClickJacking where they may not even be able to get them to click a button in JavaScript. The way it works is, again, it's sketchy, but the idea is this. Think of any button on any website, an internal site, an external site, whatever. Any site that you can actually get to appear. Wire transfers on banks, Dig, Netflix queue, webmail, anything, right? The list is virtually endless. Consider an attack that can hover invisibly, can actually create buttons, make them invisible, and put them under your mouse cursor. So you go to click on, for example, next, and what you've actually clicked on is, take me to this other website. How cool is that?
A technological standpoint, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but that's scary.
Say you have a home wireless router, you've authenticated to it, and now you've gone to a legitimate website, right? The attacker places a tag under your mouse that puts in a button that's an order to the router to delete all the firewall rules.
Mm-mm.
Right? So hackers wouldn't even need to compromise a legitimate site in order to conduct a ClickJacking attack underneath it.
But to delete all the firewall, wouldn't they need a password in that to get in?
You've already authenticated.
That's right.
Right? And so the cookie is still in your system. Mm-hmm. So it just goes in and says, okay, delete. Yep. So now at least one vendor is working on a fix for this, so they're not yet giving out a lot of detail on it, but that's the deal. And it looks like there's no defense against it until the browser manufacturers fix the problem. So we should start seeing.
You have to eliminate transparent as a color option.
Whatever.
But then everything else that uses that will break.
Right. Right. I don't know how they're going to do it. And you know what?
You don't get paid to do it.
It used to be they'd be a really, really light gray, so you could barely see them. Or the one pixel windows, it'll spawn a new window that's one pixel by one pixel, so you don't notice it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is this a Flash application, Nick? Or some
they're not saying
Java?
Anything else. They're saying it's not Java, but that's all they're saying, basically.
Okay.
It's got to be Flash or Java or something.
Yeah. So I'm thinking the no Flash option in Firefox,
they're saying
if it's Flash,
right,
helps prevent.
I don't know. Okay. Nobody knows yet.
The answer is we don't know yet.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They're simply not saying. So if you weren't scared yet,
think about it.
You should be scared now. And then the problem is, of course, there's nothing we can do about it. It's the vendors who have to fix it.
Well, what you do is the sort of workaround now is turn on tooltips in your browser if they aren't already on. So when you point to a link, turn on the status bar, sometimes some browsers call it, at the bottom of the window, it tells you the link you're really going to. And we've talked about this for years. When you think you're clicking on PayPal and you look in your status bar and it's paypal.ru, you know, so it's spelled wrong and it's not paypal.com. And that's a way to make sure you're really clicking on what you think you're clicking on. But that's right. Tedious and annoying for everything you ever click
but
on.
But you know what? At some point, you have to be an adult.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out into dangerous places, you have to take a certain amount of responsibility on yourself. And the web is a dangerous place.
If you're going to drive your car, you got to watch out for the other drivers who are ignoring the rules.
Right, right, right. So it is something you have to be very, very careful of.
Should we go on to some computer?
Yeah, we probably should. But before that, I should tell you, speaking of driving. We had our first driving lesson yesterday. It went very well.
Wait a minute. Tilt your head forward. All right. Yeah. No, there's still a lot of hair there.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no bruising.
Yeah.
So it didn't go through the windshield.
Yeah.
No, we went. I took Amelia for her first driving lesson yesterday. It was wonderful. She did very, very well. I was very impressed.
We know she'll do all right. The question is.
No, I was fine.
How are you?
No. Better me than my wife. We went out and we had actually a pretty good time. She did very, very well. There was only one point at which I had to say, try not to hit that car. And we were just in a parking lot. There was
not don't hit that car. Try not to.
Try not to. there was a truck parked way at one end, and then a car randomly parked in the middle of it somewhere. So we tried to avoid it, but at one point we went down that aisle, and she came within about 3 feet of it. Kind of, well, she went toward it, and I made her veer away about 3 feet. That was at the point very early when she thinks if the steering wheel is straight, the car is straight. And she was paying more attention. You know how everybody thinks that the first time. She was paying more attention to that. And the car is kind of curving a little to the right, just a little bit. But mostly she did really, really well. There was one point where she got very panicked because some kid on a bike came out of nowhere. I mean, I didn't even see him, and I was looking everywhere all the time.
Yeah, constantly scanning. For
right, me. And whipped in front of us maybe 20, 30 feet ahead of us, but it was way too close for Amelia. And here's what she did when she panicked. She pulled over, put the car in park, and then went,
good.
I thought, good girl.
That's excellent.
That's exactly the right thing. Exactly the right thing.
And just recompose.
We had a really good time. And then there's one point at which there were two parking lots. So we stayed in one for a while. And then I made her do big loops around both of them. So she had to cross the road, as it were. And the first time she did it, there was a car. Well, you could barely tell it was an automobile. Way down. She stopped and waited. I said, honey, if you're going to wait for him to keep making them because Detroit's still turning them out. I said, honey, take a look at where that car is. You could walk across the street. You could crawl across the street before that guy got here. I'm pretty sure you can drive across the street before that car gets here.
But she's still getting her, you know, the feel.
No, I'd rather have her be
overcautious,
absolutely.
Than getting real cocky and, you know, just, all right, go speeding now, bump you up and down as she goes from one parking lot to the other.
Right.
I've got a friend whose daughter turned 17, and, you know, they waited a while before they let her to start driving, and mom and dad can't teach her, so
yeah,
they sent her to a school.
Well, we're going to do that simply because, you know, we're all going to go. You can all go. It's a six-hour course. You take it once every 3 years, and you get money off your insurance.
Yep.
Heck yeah. I'm going.
Defensive driving course.
Yeah. It's not. They don't call it that now. Yeah. It's an in-the-classroom thing now.
Yeah, re-education.
It's usually people that have too many points on their license and need to get it reduced.
But anybody can take it and get money off their insurance. I can't imagine why we wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'd rather see all three of us get 10% off than, you know, just one of us.
Yeah.
Maybe
I don't know if it's cumulative.
Do they? I don't know, and we'll find out, you know. But I'm real interested also in seeing if they still show blood on the highway. Oh, remember that movie?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then the one they the other one they showed us, which always stuck with me, the Smith Space method of driving. You've got 4 points in front of you, behind you, and to each side, and you always want to make sure at least one of those has open space so you can move that way if there's a problem.
An exit. Right. Point. An exit.
Right, right. You always got a way out of trouble if you know where the space is. Yep. It was actually a pretty cool thing, and I just remember that.
No, that's cool.
All right, but we've got some computer questions. Which one do we want to start with?
We're 40 minutes into the show. Let's answer a question.
Why start now?
Oh, you old traditionalist stick in the muds.
I just found the bloodonthehighway.com website.
Oh, excellent. Did they show the movie? I mean, is it really the movie? Don't look
it's
at
the,
it now. Who's going to ask the question?
All right, I'll go with the first one. Sana has a question about the Security Tango. Says to run the Security Tango in safe mode is having an issue. Enterware will not load or run in safe mode, and I've restarted without being in safe mode. Is there a problem with my computer, or is there the way the program is written?
Right, and Marlene had the same question.
Yeah, and basically, folks, the only reason you need to run it in safe mode is if you were having trouble running it in regular mode. There has been a couple of issues with the newer versions of AdAware running in safe mode. So, you know, if it runs in regular mode, hey, you win.
Yeah, the issue has been that if some of the spyware cannot be removed in regular mode, so you have to run it in safe mode. The problem we're seeing now is that the antivirus programs and anti-spyware programs don't run themselves in safe mode anymore, so we're running into a catch-22 again.
Think we're going to have to, probably after the first year, revisit the whole Security Tango and the way we're doing things, because, like everything else,
everything changes.
And AdAware and SpyBots, yeah, they still do a good job, but I'm getting to where I'm leaning more towards, because of the type of spyware and Trojans and all that stuff that's coming out. I mean, these are still good two programs, but I'm starting to lean towards super anti-spyware to replace, you know, those two, and malware bytes. Malware bytes right now is a great one that we've been using, along with the super anti-spyware and the regular AVG and Zone Alarm, and that package seems to be keeping folks' computers, you know, pretty well protected and guarded against junk and all this other stuff that's right. Coming through the pipeline.
And if you haven't been... Oh, sorry, you wanted to...
No, go ahead.
If you haven't been scared yet, here's an interesting little news story that will scare you. A Trojan horse program now available to a growing number of fraudsters can add data entry fields to legitimate online banking sites and entice consumers to give up sensitive information such as bank card numbers and personal identification numbers. The malware, called Limbo, integrates itself into a web browser using a technique called HTML injection. Because it's so closely integrated in the browser, can operate even while the user is at a real bank site and can actually change the layout of that site. Nothing tells you there's anything wrong here, with one exception. You're being asked to provide some information that you were never asked to do before. If you are convinced that you are not communicating with the bank, if you're convinced that you are communicating with the bank, the fraudsters can get away with anything they like. Limbo can get into a user's computer through many paths, including both pop-up messages that ask you to download an add-on program and methods that are invisible to the user. They sometimes get on a PC in conjunction with other phishing attacks. The mostly scary part, like a lot of other malware programs nowadays, Limbo is becoming available to more fraudsters through an underground market that includes a complex supply chain and falling prices. Limbo costs about $350. So if I wanted to buy this program and then make it do things and shoot it out to a bunch of people, only cost me $350 to buy it. Used to be $1,000 about a year ago and about $5,000 2 years ago. The big trend here is it's becoming more affordable.
There are so many malicious programs for sale now that it's driving the price down. Law of supply and demand.
Right. A lot of these people are taking a software as a service approach, selling malware, selling access to botnets, and selling everything else a person needs to become a harvester of data on unsuspecting consumers. Having paid the price for this service, the harvesters can then take the identity stolen with it and sell them at a profit. The ease of going into business with this model may dramatically increase the volume of online fraud. And there was a researcher who said, if phishing were a stock, I would invest in it.
Yes, big time.
So it's become a commodity. This stuff you can very easily get your hands on these things and modify them and make them do things. So that means more and more of them are coming after you. So you need to be more and more careful. All right, we have another question. Jackie from Williamson, New York writes, when we are on the computer for any length of time, we're on dial-up, we sometimes get error messages. I don't know our memory, but looking at the computer part of our system, it says 1.47 gigahertz and 224 megabytes of RAM. Yipe. Hope that helps the memory, she's running Windows XP. We would like to change from Internet Explorer to another browser that perhaps does not have the problems of Internet Explorer, which would be, well, any other browser. Anything you can or would suggest, thank you. We love to listen to your show. Unfortunately, Wham has football on now when we used to listen to your show on the weekend. Well, you're probably not going to hear this then if you don't know that we're on the webcast, but you can get the podcast as well, and that'll be up online. So the question is, first, Jackie, let me simply say 224 megabytes of RAM, if that's really what your system is running.
Well, she's got 256, and part of it's video memory.
Shared video memory, yeah.
Right. Then more memory. That's you. What you seriously need... more memory. That will help a lot. But without knowing what the error messages are, it's very hard to analyze your problem. Your best bet at this point is to take it to a reputable dealer like Dave or Steve and have them check it out and see if you've got spyware, a hardware problem.
Or just more memory.
More memory could do it.
She may be getting out of memory errors, which is why right. she thought she needed to tell us how much memory there was.
Right.
And you would be running out of memory, especially after being on the internet for a long time.
Right. Everybody thinks that again, this goes back to that minimum amount question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 256 meg of RAM, that's all you need to run Windows, right? Well, that's certainly all you need to boot Windows.
Just Windows.
Right.
You want to run anything else on top of it.
Right, including, like, Solitaire.
Yeah.
You can boot Windows in 256 meg of RAM, and that's what Microsoft is telling you. If you actually want to do anything, a minimum is 512 meg, and a gig would be better.
And if you can't get any more than 256 meg in that computer, it's time to seriously consider moving to Linux.
Yeah, exactly. You can actually do real work with Linux. So
yeah, but the average user isn't going to go that way. I mean, you guys can dream as much as you want, you know, and you know, it'd be nice to go to Linux, but there's a lot of folks that I see on a day-to-day basis, they're lucky they know how to turn it on and just get through what they want to do.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and I really don't expect people to just run Linux.
It is a cool ass system. I mean, there's just no getting around it. And like you say, the issues that you have are non-existent, right, Nick?
Right.
I mean, you know, just like how you've stated before, how confident you are, your daughter can be on the computer, don't have to worry about anything happening because you're running Linux.
Yep.
And it's just a safer environment. But we're a small group that, you know, are fortunate enough to, you know, play around with that stuff and can handle it. Others, like I say, I've run into some that they get the computer home just because we've turned the button off in the back.
Right.
They're blown away.
Yep.
So they're amazing. The hard power
no, I truly don't expect people to be able to run Linux. I don't. It is easy to run. It is just another operating system. But people who would have trouble going from a PC to a Mac or a Mac to a PC would also have trouble going to Linux.
Yep.
XP to Vista.
You have excellent
XP
points,
to Vista.
But I maintain that anyone who can reinstall Windows can install Ubuntu, at least.
Against,
I agree with that.
Yeah, but you're also, again, talking about a very, very small percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully we'll be able to increase that percentage.
Yeah, but exactly. What happens, though, and correct me wrong, once you get into Linux and trying to get some of the other stuff to run, you're now got to get out to like a DOS command and start telling it to other commands, load commands.
Not anymore. If you just do the standard things...
Mm-hmm.
Word processing, spreadsheet,
Solitaire,
databases, Solitaire, web stuff, blah, 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 blah. You never need to go to the command line. You never need to do any of that stuff.
What about updating any
That's all
hardware.
Graphical. Yep. I have a little button right now in the corner, a little down arrow with an exclamation point in it. I click that. It says, you've got updates available. an hour later, basically. I say now, it comes up and says, okay, click here. You got to type in your password so it knows you're legitimately you, and that's fair. And then you're done. You're absolutely done. If you have to reboot, it'll tell you that, but that's very rare.
Well, no, that's good. Like I say, I haven't played with it in a long time. Yeah. I just haven't had the time.
Right.
I'd love to, you know, I just need another maybe 6 or 8 hours jammed into each day, and then maybe I could cover it all.
6 hours in each day?
Each day.
My golly, you're greedy.
Thank you. Hey, if you're going to go...
Twice on Sunday?
Go big, yes. Exactly.
ask for six, you might get three.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Apple has patched nearly... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was... Go ahead. We'll go to the next question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Gary from Oakfield, New York, is asking about iTunes. Is there a way to completely delete iTunes from his computer? Whenever he tries to install upgrades, a box opens up telling him to close iTunes, which he doesn't have open, and he can't get rid of it. What has likely happened is there are several iTunes Helper programs that run in the background, and one of them is called iTunes Helper, and this is goes for Mac and Windows. The iTunes Helper program sits in the background waiting for you to plug in your iPod so it can automatically sync your iPod.
Right.
So even if you don't have iTunes itself running, the iTunes Helper may be running as well. So if you go into your Activity Monitor, and you can cancel that process, the Process Viewer on Windows, and quit that Helper program. You can also go into your account preferences, and there's a startup items, and you can tell it not to automatically start the iTunes Helper program. And then you have to manually sync your iPod. When you plug your iPod in, you have to open iTunes yourself. So it's a convenience that's inconvenient at cases.
Let me ask a question about that. My daughter has, I believe it's 2.5 million songs that she's downloaded and somehow I've paid for on iTunes. She doesn't want them all on her iPod.
Right.
She has to do it by hand, right? Because if she says auto sync, everything goes.
Right. Automatically syncing copies everything. By default. That will also fail if the iPod isn't big enough
to
fit them all. So then it goes into manual syncing, where you can tell inside of iTunes, when you plug your iPod in, your iPod shows up as a device.
Right. I mean, we are doing it manually, but there's no middle ground. There's no, this is the stuff I want on it now.
You can tell it to only sync some playlists. And then automatically sync just those playlists instead of manually copying songs one at a time.
So if I by checking them or by doing something with them, or what do I do?
In when you plug your iPod in, it shows up as a device on the left. You click on the iPod device itself, and you get a summary of what's on the iPod, how many music, how many video, how many whatevers. And there's tabs across that where you control what podcasts you want synced, what music you want synced, and what TV show, so what of each category you want synced, and the choices are all some or manual. And so you can tell it to sync only this playlist or only these three playlists, and then it will.
But Amelia changes her playlist so often, it's just easier to do it manually.
Well, if she gets in the habit of leaving the name of the playlist alone and just putting the song she wants in that one playlist, then she can automatically sync
that playlist.
If she takes
them out, do they get removed from the iPod as well?
Yes.
Puts them in another playlist?
Then you tell her to sync those playlists.
No, but I mean, she just takes it out of this playlist, maybe puts it in a used to like these or whatever, however she wants to organize it.
It doesn't have to. It'll remain in the library.
All of your songs are always in the library. The playlists are just the specific songs you want in that one list.
All right.
And going back to Gary's question, I've posted some links on the website on how to completely remove iTunes from Mac and Windows if you want to, including a list of what the background processes are.
Good. Excellent. Thanks. All right. Speaking of Apple, Apple patched nearly 30 Java vulnerabilities in Mac OS X this week, months after Sun Microsystems Java developer, the developer of Java, fixed most of the same flaws for other operating systems. Separate updates for Mac OS 10.10.5 Leopard and Mac OS 10.10.4 Tiger patched 27 and 23 bugs, respectively. Two of the vulnerabilities in Leopard, only one of which was present in Tiger, are specific to Mac OS 10, and attackers could use them to execute malicious code. All you smug sons of guns on Apples. Both of these critical bugs could be triggered by specially crafted Java applets if the user was tricked into visiting a malicious website, Apple noted. However, the bulk of the vulnerabilities were not Mac-specific and had been patched by Sun for Windows, Linux, and Solaris as far back as March 2008. Unlike its operating system rivals, Apple maintains its own version of Java and so is responsible for handling updates for machines running OS X. Apple has been criticized for its sluggish patching of third-party components, particularly open-source code that it bundles with Mac OS X. More than a year ago, researchers at Independent Security Evaluators called Apple's inability to keep up with open-source fixes negligent. The update now brings Java SE 6 to version 1.6.0_07, Java 2 SE 5.0 to version 1.5.0_16.
It's not just Macs, it's also Sun.
J2SE 1.4.2 to 1.4.2_18.leftelbow.j.Tuesday. All are the most current versions available with Sun, with latest patches for Java, Windows, and Solaris. Which they last patched in July. So Apple has finally caught up. I do think it's not right of them to leave those things out there, because if the vulnerabilities are cross-platform, as most Java vulnerabilities are, then even though they're fixed, once Sun fixes them, the security analysts feel free to talk about them. And if Apple is now behind the curve, everybody's going to go for Apple.
Not only are you absolutely right, but there's no other venue that's mentioning this as a news item. None of the other podcast shows or anybody are talking about, they're not taking Apple to task. And I'm glad
they
are.
And they should be. Apple really needs to step up and do their thing. All right, we are done. I got to get out of here quick. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel, who did a great job as our producer. I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you in Second Life in a little while, but of course you're not going to hear this till afterwards. So thanks for listening to Sound Bites on the web for 1180 WHAM.
That's more better.
Way more better.